Hello and welcome to How To Money, a financial education podcast for young Australians aimed at opening up the conversation around money. In each episode, your host, Kate Campbell, brings in a variety of guests to explore everything from buying shares to starting your own business, all with the aim of kickstarting your personal finance journey. Just a quick reminder that everything we cover in this podcast is for financial education purposes only, and we are not giving you any advice. If you do want advice, please seek the help of a qualified and competent professional and do some research. Remember, it's your money, so take control. Camilla, thank you so much for joining me on the How To Money podcast today.
Thanks, Kate. It was really a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're doing some really exciting stuff in the financial services industry, from running a company to actually encouraging more females to get involved with investing. So I thought we'd start with maybe you just giving us a brief rundown on what eInvest does, because I think a lot of my listeners probably haven't heard of this company before, and maybe what led you to starting the business a few years ago now.
Sure, Kate, that's a great question. And eInvest is an actively managed ETF provider to investors out there. So what does actively managed mean and what are ETFs? Let's delve into those a little bit. So maybe a lot of your listeners already know what ETFs are. So they're exchange traded funds, and they're essentially managed funds that you find on the exchange that you can trade just like a share. So there are lots out there, and the majority of them are passively managed, means that they are following an index or a built index, really. What eInvest does that's different is we partner with investment professionals and teams of them who specialize in certain areas, and their goal is to outperform the index or achieve an outcome. So actively managed means that we are tapping into the investment intellect of, you know, teams of professionals and bring their skills to market. So our view out there is that investors should have passively managed funds with actively managed funds to grow their business, grow their assets. And there are asset classes out there where actively managed, you know, investment intellect is really, really useful. For example, small caps or fixed income or income generation in Aussie equities. They're all things that we believe that we can outperform the market. And so therefore, they're the type of qualities of investment that we will bring out as an ETF. So eInvest has been around since 2018. We started our first ETF, which is IGA, trading on the ASX. Now we've got five ETFs out there, both on Chi-X and on the ASX. And, you know, we're just under $100 million in assets across those businesses or those funds. So, you know, I lead a team of great people who are really passionate about investing. And, you know, our view is that we would love to have Australians to be better invested over time and to have access to really high quality investment intellect to help their wealth grow.
And I think that's a great one to open up the conversation on, because I think a lot of listeners wouldn't have heard of active ETFs before, because there is a lot of information out there, and we've talked about it on the podcast before about the more passive ETFs, but active ETFs are a whole nother area and one that definitely looks like it's growing certainly over the next few years.
Indeed. And so it first started with Magellan bringing out their first actively managed ETF, I think in 2015. So we weren't too far after that, but I guarantee you by, you know, the next 5 years, there will be a myriad of choice out there in the actively managed space. So I, you know, implore your listeners to actually go and have a bit of a look-see about what asset classes are, you know, are better inclined towards active management and which ones may not be, and to actually think about putting their portfolio together with both actively managed and passively managed alternatives. So Kate, I started eInvest because, you know, I think the ETF market is a great way to democratize investing for everyday Australians. It is a simple, easy way to gain access to really high quality investment professionals in areas where investors might not necessarily have access to usually. So that's the reason why I started eInvest. My view is that Australians should become better investors. And they should have the control that they desire out of their investing. And ETFs is a great way to start. And so that's where eInvest came from.
Absolutely. And today's conversation, I wanted to focus a bit more on careers in the financial services industry, because there are just so many roles involved, from everything from what you would see as the portfolio manager to the people behind the scenes running the show, operations, HR. And most people only see the pictures they see in the media of people running around in the white jackets. And that's really not the case anywhere anymore.
That was back in the 80s.
It's quite interesting because we don't really know what the industry looks like behind the scenes. And I think that can kind of cut off some potential career paths for people. And I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of rundown on like the really wide variety of roles available for people in the financial services industry that listeners might not have heard about before.
Look, there are so many roles out there. And when I talk to people who, you know, approach me about careers in finance, my view is give everything a try, particularly when you're at uni, because, you know, there's different cultures out there, there are different roles out there, there are different bosses out there, and you really need to work out what fits for you. And finance is a broad church. So it has the likes of everyone in it, from lawyers and, you know, geologists and environmentalists and journalists. And, you know, there are so many, you know, on my podcast, Shares Not Shoes, I actually interviewed a friend of mine, Jess, and she trained as an optometrist and she is in finance, right? So you need to think about, it is really a broad church with a lot of different skills. And it's not the view of, oh, you're the, you know, like you said, the white lab coat with, you know, or behind Excel, just sitting there plugging through the things. It really isn't like that. It's a really people-focused industry and it takes all types. So the creative types are definitely welcome in it. So as for jobs, there, you know, we can talk about being an investment analyst and a portfolio manager, and they're the ones that people, you know, really think about when they think about finance. And they're great roles to have. You know, you get to interview companies, you get to put portfolios together, you get to sit down and analyze what the growth prospects are, what the downside prospects are, all this, you know, scenario analysis and all that sort of stuff. But there, you know, I run a business now, but my background is in sales and marketing. And, you know, there are lots of opportunities for sales and marketing professionals to be in finance. Operations is a huge place. So, you know, if you don't think that you are necessarily, you know, the biggest extrovert, maybe like me, you know, there's some great spots, particularly in operations, where we can talk about, you know, there's reconciliations and, you know, all the grunt work that actually makes finance go is essentially in operations. And I think they're really great things that everyone should look at. And then there's legal, compliance and risk. And their areas, particularly right at the moment, after the Royal Commission, there's such demand in legal and compliance and risk because everyone's getting sucked up in that space. And I find, and Australia is a real leader in risk, particularly. I know, for example, UNSW has a really good risk program. You know, think about areas like that because they're not necessarily top of mind when people think about finance, but managing risk and managing risk in the business and understanding where, you know, things can go wrong and what are the mitigants, that's really, really critical. And, you know, there's lots and lots of demand in that space. But then you can think about financial planning and para planning. You can be an EA to a, you know, a really big team of investment professionals. You can be in client services. You can, I haven't even talked about the banking space. You can be doing credit or loans. There's so many spots. And I just really implore people out there who are really interested in knowing more about finance that you should actually take some time and work out, you know, what suits you and where your passion lies. And, you know, I guarantee you finance will find you a spot, definitely. You know, things like even agri-finance, that is a really big spot coming up at the moment, particularly, you know, fintech is great, venture cap, M&A, there's lots of different spaces. And then you think about that and then you go, okay, well, there's different asset classes and different geographies. You know, you can specialize in different things in that area as well. So there's so many opportunities out there. You just need to go and find them.
And I think that's one of the misconceptions, that you have to be a finance person to go into finance, where so many of the best people I meet in the industry have actually got a lot of expertise in another area completely irrelevant to finance, but they've found a way to bring those two interests together. And even some of the best analysts and investors I've met have got a completely different background, and they bring that approach to what they do, and it just makes them all the better for it.
And I can give you two great examples. A really good friend of mine who is a portfolio manager at Paradice. She trained at Morgan Stanley and then bought a baking business, industrial baking business, went off and ran a small business essentially, and then has come back into finance and has given her a much richer view on how to analyze companies and where the sort of the levers are. And the second example is always a great one that I use in the Perennial team, where our resources analyst actually is a geologist and spent, 4 years down a mine in the Ivory Coast, right? So, and then he's moved into finance. So there's some great opportunities. And don't think that even if you're halfway through your career that you can't pivot with the skills that you have to come into finance, because it will definitely welcome you.
Absolutely. And if someone listening is in high school or they're maybe 1 or 2 years into their uni degree at the moment and they're interested in pursuing a career in the financial services industry and they might be interested in bringing maybe a different background to it, are there any particular courses or degrees that you recommend studying and learning more about or see commonly threading throughout the industry?
Yeah, sure. So commerce and economics is pretty much the standard, right? And I would dare say that it was, and I'm not going to say it in inverted commas because you can't see it, right? But it is what everyone chooses. It might be the boring option, but what you're finding is that it's commerce and something else now. So it's commerce and science or commerce and engineering or commerce and law or commerce and medicine or arts or whatever. And you bring the other skill set that you're learning in the other degree and putting it together with your commerce degree. Because commerce gives you a really good sort of understanding of how the world works from a supply and demand point of view, that you get a lot of accounting in there, you get, lots of statistics in there as well, but you also get options in marketing and economic history and all that sort of stuff, which I think is really fabulous. But again, there's lots of information technology people who are coming into the industry. We have a lot of data in our industry. If that's not something you can probably just point your finger at, but we have so much data in our industry that information technology and those data professionals will just be, so well sought after in our industry going forward. But as I said, when I look at people today coming into the industry, my view is that it's great that you have a commerce degree. That's fabulous. But what else do you have to you? And I can see particularly out there, lots of people driving for really, really great marks. And that's awesome. But my view is the best people to work with are people who have good street smarts and good book smarts, right, together. And so you need to have, because it is, as I said before, it is a people industry, and we need to, you need to have relationships with people and need to be able to deal and manage up and manage down and manage sideways into your peers. And you need to be able to have really good negotiation skills and listening skills and things like that. And you can get those in other areas, in other degrees and things like that. But sometimes people think that those skills are innate, but actually they're mostly learned. So I'm always looking for, when I'm hiring people, for a good mix of street smarts and book smarts. Above all of that, just having a really good view of, lifelong learning. I think that's really critical these days, being adaptive, because no day in the finance industry is ever, ever the same. Like, we work with markets. Every second there's a new piece of information, that market's moving up and down. no day is ever going to be the same. So you need to be flexible and adaptive. And I think that that's a trait that lots of people are looking for. And maybe I can tell you what I did, and that can, you know, give your listeners some examples. So I did an arts and commerce degree at uni. Feels like a long time ago now, but I loved putting the arts and the commerce together because I did stuff like, you know, French film studies and mass media in South Korea and Japanese politics. And you don't necessarily get that opportunity to do that in your commerce, but you do get that, the opportunity to do that in my arts. And I knew I wanted to go into business. And I knew I wanted to go into funds management, and I knew I wanted to be in marketing. So, you know, putting those two, you know, skills, the arts piece and the commerce piece together was really important to me. Then actually what I did do is, because I actually chose not to do a finance major. My majors were in economics, marketing, and Asian studies. And what I did do at the time was, at the same time as I was at university, I actually did a diploma in financial advising at the Securities Institute, which is now FINSIA. And then that then led to a master's of applied finance and investment. And so I was already sort of 6 months into the master's when everybody else was finishing university. So that was the degree that everyone sort of just popped out at the time to do after they finished their degree. So I did that, which was great. I really enjoyed that. It sort of cemented. We had lots of practitioners in the industry come and talk to us and things like that, which was great. And then I went off, you know, I'm a lifelong learner, so people might think that's overachieving, but I do love formal study. And I did an MBA. That was really fabulous. I see the world entirely differently today than I did before I did that. But lots of people, you know, do like the CFA or Kaya or a master's in commerce afterwards. Generally, there's no sitting still once you've finished your first undergraduate degree. You know, for example, you know, I just did a course in AI and machine learning, not to, you know, it's more about business strategy than it was actually coding it, but, you know, giving me an insight into what finance could be in 10 years' time if we actually applied some of that stuff. And you just need to, you know, find your passion and really follow it, because I think that's really important.
And that's a really important takeaway, because the finance industry doesn't stand still. You need to be committed, like really any industry, really, to lifelong learning and further development, whether that's through formal study or actually just going off and doing a course on one of the many online platforms out there.
Totally. Like Coursera is great. You know, I did the AI course at MIT, and it was just an 8-week thing, which was great. You know, there's lots of, you know, I've done Section 4 with Scott Galloway's business. If you listen to some of his, he has a great podcast as well. You know, he's in particularly a professor of marketing at NY Stern. You know, there's some great short courses that you can do that can really sort of jump you forward in your thinking. And so particularly, you know, with finance, when you're talking to different companies or talking to different people, then you need to understand a lot about a little and a little about a lot. You need to have some continual knowledge and building over the time of your journey as well.
And one of the other challenges I believe the finance industry is facing is getting females into the investment and portfolio manager positions. I mean, talking to lots of different companies, there are lots of females working for them, but they're often in certain roles and not other roles. And I think it's really hard to be what you can't see. There aren't many female portfolio managers out there in Australia and female investment analysts, especially not many with a public profile. And I was wondering if you were able to comment on some of the barriers that maybe have stopped women progressing into these roles in the past, and what we can do as individuals to overcome them, and maybe some of the things the industry needs to focus on as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. And essentially it comes to the crux of why I started F3, Future Females in Finance, because my view is that, you know, the world out there is 50-50. Why isn't it 50-50 in finance? And really, if we step back and look at the stats, you know, the Workplace Gender Authority in Australia, their stats in finance are actually not too bad. I think they're 45% female, 55% male. But then there's serious pockets of poor gender diversity. And you're right to point out the the portfolio manager and analyst role. So if we dig down into particularly investment management, I think the last stats I saw is in Australian equity investment teams, there's 22% female coverage. But when you get to the portfolio manager, it ends up being about 4%. And that's so devastating. I can't tell you. And, you know, I'm really passionate about this industry. I've been in the industry for nearly 20 years. And, you know, my view is I'm going to be here for another 20 years. So how can we change these statistics, particularly in certain areas? You know, financial planning is another one. Investment banking, there's actually a lot in there that really need to sort of pull their socks up and really make an effort here. And I would say, Kate, if there was one silver bullet, we would have fixed it by now, and there's not. I'm currently reading a book called Undiversified, The Big Gender Short in Investment Management, which is actually written by a couple of, one portfolio manager and another finance professional from the States. And there's so many options. And it's funny because I'm reading it going, oh yeah, this is so true. And I could have written this book myself. But there's lots of them. So let's think about it. There's both supply side and demand side issues. So let's look about the supply side. So the actual females themselves, there's work-life balance issues and perceptions that they may have, perceptions of culture, whether they fit in or not. There's perceptions about, you know, all about maths, which we've already touched on, and it's not all about maths. It really isn't. There is an aspect of maths, so don't get me wrong, but it's not all about maths, and you need to understand that. Obviously, there's limited role models, which is why, you know, I'd like to doing stuff like this with you today, because I really want to be one of those role models that people can stand up and go, hey, I can see someone who looks like me, is positive like me, who can do this sort of stuff. And I, you know, even if I inspire one person, the industry is way better off. I think we're not doing a great job in promoting the industry in the undergrad space. And you and I spoke about this just before we started. You know, the accounting firms are doing a great job. The banks are doing a great job in this space. But investment management and other areas, financial planning, for example, because finance is enormous and there are enormous companies in it, but there's so many small companies that are really, really high quality that you need to just go and find. And, you know, you need to do a little digging. And just because they don't have a huge brand name doesn't mean that they aren't on a global scale. So you need to sort of change perceptions about that as well. The view is male dominated. Well, sure, yeah, but that's self-perpetuating. So if we're not adding more females in because they think that there's not enough females in there, then it's only going to get worse, which I think is really sad. You know, there's confidence. We talk about confidence and we talk about putting ourselves forward, you know, asking for a pay rise, stepping in. So say, for example, what we do with F3 is we do a work experience, an online work experience program. And that's all there just to nudge females in. It is really supportive. It's done in a group basis. There's no pass or fail. You meet fabulous people throughout the program, but it's about giving you the confidence about, hey, oh my God, I can so do this. And just a slight, you know, slight nudge into the industry, which I think is really important. And then on the demand side, there's lots of stuff like bias, which everyone talks about because people hire themselves, right? So actually thinking about trying to not hire yourself is really, really hard. And there's limited internship and work experience opportunities, which is again why I started F3. It's all online. So it's really flexible for both the employer and the students as well. So, you know, everyone points to the fact that no one, you know, you ask someone, say, you know, I'm hiring for a junior, but no females are applying. I think, you know, in my example, I have an example where a couple of years ago we did a junior hire, 280 applicants, 24 were female. That's not enough. That's really not enough. So I just implore everyone out there listening today, if you are interested in finance, put yourself forward. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? A no. That's not really bad. just keep going. So there are lots of perceived barriers, I would dare say, and lots of barriers that we need to actually really overcome. So we're trying to do that F3, and I definitely trying to do that personally myself when I'm hiring in the business. So yeah, it's really important to me to change the industry, because, you know, I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I don't want to sit here in 20 years time. And when she's saying, "Hey, mom, I want to be in finance," I don't want to sit here and say, "I haven't tried to change the industry for the better." So as I said, come on in. It's a broad church. Put your hand up, and you will be definitely welcome.
So if someone was interested in entering the financial services industry in the next couple of years, or maybe interested in even pivoting their career where they are right now, do you have any tips for starting to build a network or meaningful relationships within the industry? Because it's really important, as both finding jobs and working in that industry, to know other people there.
Oh, definitely. And may I say, Kate, I think you probably asked the right question to the right person here, because I am a lover of networking, and people think I'm like entirely woohoo loopy, but I'm the type of person who will walk into a room and know nobody and go, yes, because, you know, I get to meet new people, understand their stories, you know, tell my stories. And I love that. I get an entire buzz, but I appreciate when people don't like it, because it can be difficult. It definitely can be difficult. And, you know, it's a learnt skill. So I used to watch my mum on, you know, fundraising for charity events as a little kid, and she'd be working the room and, you know, meeting all these people. And I just go like, wow. But, you know, I appreciate that not everyone's in the same boat. So there's a couple of things that I would definitely do about building the network. So let's start with some networking tips, and then let's go at the end to where I think you should start networking. So networking tips, my top tip is to always start with a smile. So, and, you know, smiles break down perceived barriers and makes you approachable and just makes it easier for you to have an instant rapport with people. So yeah, a smile goes a really long way, as they say. My second tip here is also to ask lots of questions and provide information about yourself where you think there could be common ground and an instant connection found with a person. So, and I always use travel as a great networking discussion point, because everyone loves to talk about themselves, and particularly, you know, where their next travel place is going to be or where they last went. And people spark up and they love to talk about the joy they have, or the dreams that they're going to have for the next travel trip. So, you know, it's a great adventure to have travel. So I always use that as a really great area for asking questions, and just realize that people love to talk about themselves. So ask great questions, but also be a really, really active listener. And that is a really hard skill to have, because lots of people do. You just, you know, when you and I would talk, we just happily talk about ourselves. But actually listening to someone and getting an understanding of who they are is really important with networking. And then the last thing I would say is to practice, because as I said in the beginning, it is a really learned skill, and you need to practice regularly to get good at it. And when I mentor people, you know, this is an area where lots of people like to talk about, you know, I don't feel comfortable, or how do I get better at it? And really it is put something in the diary once a month, once every 2 months, and actually go and do it, because it's really important to become a, you know, what I would describe as a professional at it, but, you know, feel more comfortable at it is probably where I would say. But there's some great networking opportunities within the industry. And also if you're at uni, so let's talk about uni first. So, you know, there's lots of great network opportunities within the student societies at uni. So go and seek some of those out, particularly, you know, some of the universities have some really great finance or women's societies, particularly women's in business societies. So there's some really great areas to start looking at. And then in the industry, if you know, there's lots of industry organizations that do a lot of this sort of stuff. So, You know, if you're wanting a career in the industry, you know, you can head towards, say, for example, the CFA Society. They do a lot of networking. A lot of the industry organizations like the Financial Services Council, FSC, they have one, you know, lots and lots and lots of different events. But if you're an investor and you're looking to increase your knowledge in this space and like to, you know, network with other investors and talk about investing, that's different again. So, you know, investors could head to things like the Australian Investors Association or the Australian Shareholders Association. The ASX does some great stuff for investors to start learning about investing or, you know, network with other investors. And there's some, you know, really great social areas. Bits. So there's meetups, you know, when they happen before COVID, lots of meetups in the finance space. There are lots of networking opportunities within the social space. All the finfluencers that are out there, there's worth having, you know, having a look at in that space as well. There's lots of professional development or personal development opportunities out there. You just need to go and find them. But there's some great ideas there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just have to be prepared to go and look for them. They're there if you're ready to get involved and actually prioritizing it and putting it into your calendar, because if you don't, it will just take a backseat and years will go past and you won't have done anything to develop this network.
Yeah. And I think people forget that networking, everyone goes, oh, I don't like it. You know, it makes me feel uncomfortable. But networking is about building your own personal brand, right? So if you hide under a rock and no one knows how great you are because you haven't done enough networking, the only person to blame is yourself, right? So you need to get out from under that rock and show people how fabulous you are outside of your business, right? So if you want to have a big personal brand and you want to build your personal brand, you know, networking is definitely the way to do it. Like, I give you a personal example. So I had a number of roles. All of them were external. So internal. One was head of marketing. So that was internal to the business. Then I went to an offshore business development role. So selling to people and superannuation funds and pension funds offshore. But then I had my first child, Henry, and I got a role that then needed to pivot to onshore. And I didn't have, because of my two other roles, I didn't have a network onshore in Australia. So I decided that within a 6-month period, I needed to go to an opening of an envelope, literally. And I put my hand up for everything. You know, I put my hand up for, you know, Christmas committees for social things within the industry. And I put up my hand at university within the business faculty, just to build my profile, because I didn't have one because of all my past roles. And I'll tell you what, within 6 months, you know, if you didn't know who Camilla Love was, I mean, that sounds a bit wanky really, but you know, I really put a concerted effort in it, because my day job, really the crux of my day job, was, you know, needed that profile build, and networking was where I went to first. So there you go.
I love that story. And I think there's a lot of takeaways for listeners from that. Now, given we're a personal finance podcast and you are in the industry, I thought it was fitting to end the episode by asking you to share your number one personal finance or investing tip for my listeners.
Only one? That's that's tough. That's really tough. But I'll give
your favorite one.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll give you two. And the first one is to just start, right? So people think that investing is this mystic thing that, I don't know if I have enough knowledge, or, you know, I don't know how to do it. But really, you need to be open to learning, and open to learning about risk and return and how to gather information and decision make, essentially, without having full understanding or control of necessarily the outcome, because that's what the risk is when you invest. When you start investing, and ETFs are a really great way to start. You know, it's a simple journey. You get high diversification over a number of different companies or securities, depending on which asset class you invest in. And that then, through one trade, that then gives you exposure to a number of different companies to then get more understanding so that when you decide that you want to jump off and do individual stock investing or whatever it is, or go to a different, you know, risk level or move into a different asset class, you have an understanding of how it sort of works and what influences companies and what influences prices like currency or interest rates. Or it's really important to just start and to start in a simple, measured way to make you feel more comfortable and then go on from there. The second thing that I always say is don't ever invest in anything that you don't understand. The way that I describe that is that if you can't explain it to your grandma and your grandma doesn't understand it, then don't invest in it, because you do need to understand it somewhat. And if you, you know, if you're talking about derivatives or you're talking about cryptocurrency or you're talking about, and you don't understand it, just don't go there. Go and do your research, get a better understanding, and then go again. So the two are just start. And the other one is, you know, don't invest in anything that you don't understand. So I've given you like a bonus, like a 1A and a 1B.
Very sound advice. Now, Camilla, if people want to learn a bit more about you and eInvest, where should they head?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. So you can head to eInvest.com.au. And if you are interested in what I do at F3, you can go to F3.com.au as well. And I also have a podcast, Shares Not Shoes, where we talk about careers in finance. So you can hit me up on LinkedIn. Feel free to, you know, just note that you've listened to the fabulous podcast with Kate today. And feel free to reach out. We're always happy to chat to people who are looking at getting a career in the industry, people who are looking to invest, whatever it is. We're always happy to chat. So thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your wisdom and advice with my listeners today.
Thanks, Kate. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the How To Money podcast. If you enjoyed this, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and send any questions our way via www.howtomoney.online. You can also catch us on Twitter and Instagram at HowToMoneyAUS, and we'd love to hear from you. You've been listening to the How To Money podcast.